Welcome to another edition of the Superflight Podcast, your Polly Applebaum of NBA podcasts, because hairstyles can be a statement too. I'm your host as usual, Joe Borelli, coming at you from my studio in Brooklyn. It's Sunday, April 9th, 2017. What's happening, people? Real quick, ways to get in touch with the show. You can follow along on Twitter at SuperflightPod. You can follow me personally at Joe Borelli on Twitter. You can email the show at thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can go to the website, The Superflight Podcast, and listen to all the shows there. You can, including the archive shows, you can go to SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. If you go to iTunes, please rate and review so that other people can find the show. It helps a lot. You can go to the Almighty Baller Podcast Network and follow along there. Follow a bunch of really good shows. If you don't like this one, you'll find a number of good ones that you like there. And starting this week, you can listen to the Superflight NBA show on Dash Satellite Radio on the Almighty Baller Radio Network. That's right, we're going radio. So if you don't have Dash Satellite Radio, you should download the app. It's really good. You can listen to all kinds of music, whatever you want, all the time, streaming, I guess. I'm not sure how it works. Don't ask me. I've used it. I just don't know how it works. I don't understand computers and fancy technology. Technology eludes me. I'm getting old. I'm really not old. Anyway, so there's all that. Heads up, and there you go, guys. Feel free to listen along in many, many ways. So, what's new? Let's see. I was walking home from work the other day, right? Excuse me. I'm feeling a little under the weather, as you'll hear in a minute with Damon Rangulo, my next guest, who I always love having on the show. It's a pleasure to have him when we talk about the upcoming lottery. But I was walking home the other day. This is really a pointless story, but for a long time, my wife and I have been thinking about buying a dog. We don't do it because, honestly, neither one of us are home enough to have one. We, she works long hours as well as, so do I. I'm gone at least almost 12 hours a day every day. She's usually gone more. So don't break into my apartment while I'm gone. This is all I'm saying. But we thought about getting a dog, and every time I pass this one store, I'm just, these puppies are so cute. You know, they put the puppies in the window. It's hard not to like stop at the window and look at the puppies. The other day they had two little French bulldogs in the window, and oh my God, they were adorable. So I had to stop and I had to go in, and I was looking around, and they've got lots of cages full of puppies inside. And I feel weird about this, man. I don't like the animal mill kind of thing where they breed puppies. And it's fine. I mean, there's so many dogs out there that need homes, need a good home, that are in shelters, and I would feel terrible about buying a puppy from a store anyway. But I went in anyways, and I was like, I just got to see how much these things are. So I walk in, and there those stores flooded with people because everybody wants a dog. And I asked the guy, $2,350 for a puppy, right? Like, what? What are you talking about? That's a lot of money. And, it is a living being. It's an animal. I mean, what would I be worth? Probably not much. But still, yeah, I'm not crazy about it. But anyway, needless to say, I walked out of there. The point of my story is that if you're going to get a dog, maybe think about getting one that needs actual home, a shelter dog. Because these puppies, from stores, they'll find their place. People will sell them. They're not gonna put them to death or anything, I don't think. Maybe if they get too old, they send them to shelters. I should look more into this. I wonder how this works. It's sad. Sad that I don't know. It's sad if they put the dogs to death. That's horrible. But it's sad that I don't know what I'm talking about while I'm talking about it. Sorry, guys and gals. But if you need a dog or a puppy, yeah, you should get one from a shelter or a rescue because those dogs need love too. Really, seriously. Like, for Christmas, my sisters went and got my father a dog from a shelter. And man, this is the sweetest dog you've ever met in your life. She was probably 2 years old So you're not getting a puppy, and I understand that's what so many people want. Their kids want puppies, and they want puppies because puppies are adorable, and I love puppies, don't get me wrong. I mean, they turn into dogs. Here's the problem with dogs, though. I'm not trying to talk you out of dogs. I'm just saying that if you're going to get a dog, maybe think about a shelter because those dogs are actually in danger of losing their lives because nobody wants them. Or they've come from really bad homes where they were abused and, you know, it's a terrible situation. It's terrible. Like, no living being should ever be abused. And if you can offer your home to a being like a dog that needs your help and needs your companionship and you need theirs, so that's a great idea. I think do that. Here's my drawback with dogs. Here's my only complaint about dogs. I love dogs. I love petting dogs. I love looking at dogs. Dogs are a lot of fun. The only problem with dogs is dogs are like children that never grow up. They're like four-year-olds. Their entire life. If they live to be, 15, 16 years old, for that entire time, you're going to be taking care of a four-year-old. Just give that some thought before you decide to get a dog. If you are thinking about getting a dog, that's all. So I don't know why I stopped and looked at the puppies, but puppies are cute. And there you go. It's the first time I've ever stopped at this place. Other than that, I don't really have much. I'm not feeling great, as I mentioned already, so I'm going to keep this short today, and Domin's going to be on right after these messages. Today's sponsor of the Superflight Podcast is GlassesUSA.com, where you can get quality prescription glasses at up to 70% off retail price. At GlassesUSA.com, you can choose from a huge selection of frames in more than 2,500 different styles. From in-house brands like Muse and Amelia E, to designer brands like Ray-Ban, Oakley, Adidas, and more, GlassesUSA.com has got you covered for glasses. Just go to GlassesUSA.com now and you can try any pair of glasses using their virtual mirror feature. All you have to do is upload a picture of your face from Facebook or your camera computer. You use the alignment tool, align the pair of glasses you want on your face, and go to town, man. It couldn't be easier. You're going to know exactly how these glasses look before you ever buy. So it's basically worry-free. Virtually worry-free. Virtually, like the virtual mirror feature. Anyway, go to GlassesUSA.com now and enter promo code ALMIGHTY to get 55% off of any pair of glasses at checkout. That's promo code ALMIGHTY, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y, to get 55% off of your glasses at checkout. Okay, now back to the show. So, Domin Rangulo, welcome back to this show. How are you, my
friend? Hey, how you doing, Joe?
I'm good.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man, of course. Always. You are always welcome on. sorry, I was just explaining to you before I started recording, but I'll tell my listeners, I'm a little low energy today because I'm getting sick again. So, if I sound a little bit down and out, that's why. It's never fun.
Listen, Joe's just saying that because he wants me to talk more.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, you have to do all the talking. also, I wanted to scold you for going on the fuzz without asking me. No, I'm just kidding. How was it with those guys? I listened to the podcast. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, those guys are awesome. Honestly, that is the first conversation I think I've had with somebody in Australia.
Yeah. They're good dudes, man. They're very knowledgeable about the NBA, which always surprises me. Whenever I talk to somebody from Australia about the NBA, I'm like, man, you know more than I do about this. Well, how is that?
Yeah, it's you know, and it's like we forget that it's not like we go to a lot of games. Like, I can speak for myself personally. I live in LA, but that doesn't make me more or less able to watch the games, right? I don't go to a lot of games. And so it's a really interesting dynamic where, yeah, I talk to, you know, I see sometimes on Twitter, you don't realize where people are when you're talking to them. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a conversation with somebody from the Philippines, and I conceptually knew that, yes, the NBA is huge in Philippines, but I didn't realize, like, to the depths, like, including regular season, crappy games, like, they're breaking it down. And it's really cool. The NBA is in a really interesting place in terms of its global kind of reach.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the reasons why I, you know, historically I've been a much bigger football fan than I have been a basketball fan, but it's totally flipped now. And part of that reason is because of the it's a global game. Like, the one thing, yeah, I always hated about the NFL was, like, we're world champions when you win. I'm like, no, you dumbass. Right. You're not a world champion. You're a United States champion.
Right.
Good for
right.
you.
Right.
Yeah, but in the NBA, you can actually legitimately say that. Like, there's nobody better than, you know, USA basketball right now. And let's hope right. it stays that way because, you know, we live here and It's the best.
of course.
But yeah, it's pretty interesting, man. There's fans all over the world, and it's awesome. But speaking of, you know, bad basketball, let's talk. Yeah. We were texting or emailing back and forth a little bit about, you know, where we've come to the point in the season where there's just a number of teams like trying to race to the bottom. And it's funny, Woj just put out, I saw it this morning as soon as I woke up, there was a Woj like 2-minute report about teams racing to the bottom. I'm like, oh, that's interesting, because I was just about to talk about that. But there's so many teams, at least a good 6 of them, that are trying to race to the bottom spot this year. And I think it's really important for you and I to talk about it as Sixers and Lakers fans. It could get very heated, but you know, I love you too much to say anything bad. But I'm really curious to get your take on it. So I should start by saying that, like, all right, we may get into a little bit of the playoff matchups too, but you know, for the last half of the season, there's been this sort of tankathon in a way that's year, like this year, I remember more, not, I shouldn't say I remember because it just happened, but I feel like it's happening more blatantly this year than any year I can remember past. Like, people are just bold-faced tanking. They're like, you know what? It's fine. We're going to sit all our starters. Like in the case of the Lakers, they sat Mozgov and Deng, who are both, you know, I don't know how much they're contributing.
Go ahead. So I think there's a few things here, right? So I think not only you, but a lot of people who cover the NBA kind of from the more analytics side are also drawing a comparison to the fact that it's so openly accepted and the process got a lot of crap, right, in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And I think, so I actually kind of, even though that, you know, that conversation has been, you know, in some ways talked to death, I do think it's interesting to keep bringing up, because that was such a talking point for so long and so loudly. And, you know, I understand where you're coming from for that. Now, specifically as regards to, I think it's beneficial to talk about the Lakers situation. Mozgov was a mistake, right?
Which and I both talked about at the beginning of the year. Right. Remember, it was the first time you came on, we were both like, what?
Right, exactly. And so it actually made more sense for the team to play a guy like Zubac, who is a second rounder who has overachieved all year and earned his spot there, right?
For sure.
Now, benching him altogether is probably more tank related, because he's, you know, Mozgov, he was still good on the defensive end, and the Lakers are really bad defensively, but they're probably looking at it from a developmental standpoint.
And that's fine, but you could bring him off the bench if you're not going to start
right,
him.
Exactly. Yeah. No, and I agree with that. And then in regards to Deng actually, as a backup 4, could have been very beneficial to this team, especially because some of the bench units that the Lakers are trotting out, especially like recently, are really, really bad. And somebody like Deng could actually be of use. And his contract was also a mistake, because when he was playing in Miami, that's where he was before he was in LA. Mm-hmm. He was playing power forward, and he was doing really well in that position. He actually, when his contract was announced, people were less surprised, but it ended up being a worse fit for the team, because we have, like, you know, Julius Randle, Larry Nance Jr. So I just wanted to get that out there. But you're right. The Lakers are, in fact, more than last year, blatantly tanking this year. They're running out lineups that we all are watching. We know that there's no reason why this lineup should be out there, right? Against the Spurs, they ran out of lineup. And I challenge you, as a non-Lakers fan, who somebody doesn't, you know, follow the team day in, day out, to understand, like, to explain to me who these people are. This is the lineup that ran out. Tyler Ennis, David Nwaba, I'm trying to think of the third guy. I think it was Meta World Peace, Thomas Robinson, and Tariq Black. And it was Corey Brewer instead of Meta World Peace, right?
Mm-hmm.
Literally, Tariq Black was the only guy who was on the Lakers roster to start the year. Rest of these guys are like D-League guys, or, you know, Houston just dumped Corey Brewer's contract. That kind of a lineup actually didn't really even happen last year when the Lakers, you know, it was the four farewell tour and all that.
Right.
The tanking is so much more blatant this year, and it's because of the incentive, right? Philly fans don't need to be reminded that if the Lakers lose their top three pick, they're getting the pick, and that's huge. And for the Lakers, it's connected to they will also lose another first rounder if they give up this year's first rounder. So they have all the incentive in the world. And I think more than the specific year-to-year tanking, I think that the one thing that I think the whole entire NBA should learn from this is that these pick protections are terrible. Top three sounds like, okay, so if you finish in the bottom three, you're likely to get that pick.
Mm-hmm.
It's the odds are really, really bad. We're talking if you have – so the Lakers are either going to finish with the second worst record or the third worst record. They're Phoenix, who is even more blatantly tanking.
Yeah.
Phoenix and L.A. So if the Lakers end with the second worst record, they'll have, I think, a 55.8% chance to keep their pick. And if they finish with the third worst, I think they're 47.9. So we're talking roughly 56% and 49%.
Which is
those odds aren't odds aren't not great.
No,
like that's a coin flip. That is a coin flip. That is a coin flip weighted in a slight direction, either to you positive to you or the other side. But it's still a coin flip. So I think the pick protections are a reminder that hey, you know, let's all GMs in the league should avoid this.
Well, I think here's the thing. So, okay, so I'm going to get on a moral high horse right now. And my problem with the whole thing, especially with the Lakers blatantly tanking, first of all, is that everyone, not necessarily the Lakers, except for your coach, Luke Walton, came out and said he was like so against tanking, he would never do it. Okay, cool. Thanks for that. What are you doing now? Anyway.
And the thing is,
it's not. Okay, but wait, we'll get to it. But not even him specifically. Like it's the general coverage of how they how everyone around the league, how all the sports media covered the Sixers when Sam Hinkie, he was not trying to mask what he was doing at all. He was taking chances on D League guys. Like he found Robert Covington. He realized that there was two ways to build. You can either build through the draft or you can build through free agency. And nobody was going to Philadelphia with that team, right? So what's your option? You go, and by the way, the guys, the top tier guys that will win you a championship like LeBron James, never coming to Philadelphia. So what are your options? You have to tank. You have to try and maximize your odds of getting the best possible players you can. If that means not playing good basketball for like 3 or 4 years in a row, okay, fine. He was not, and it's, by the way, not Sam Hinkie's fault. He's just taking advantage of the system that's in place. This is what the league has set up. So it's okay if you do it slyly or, you know, on the DL or I don't even know what the word is. It's okay if you accidentally tank, right? If the perception is that you're doing this by accident. But if you go out and you do it on purpose the way Sam Hinkie did, well, God forbid, well, they're going to have to bring in a Colangelo and try and replace you, right?
And, Joe, okay.
Wait, let me go on. Yep. That aside, everyone around the league was like, oh, well, we would never tank blatantly. We would never tank. And you have four teams right now. The Sixers, you know, are included in that. But you have the Lakers. They're so blatantly, obviously tanking. The Knicks are horribly, badly tanking. Like, Derrick Rose is out with a knee injury. They're resting Porzingis. The Suns. I mean, everyone is doing this unapologetically. And for some reason, nobody is getting the crap that they put on the Sixers for those few years. By the way, now it looks like, and I understand what the league was trying to do, was trying to keep this from happening, because ultimately, if Sam Hinkie's plan worked, this is what you would get. It really kind of happened anyway, right? But it just bothers me a little bit that nobody has to take the amount of grief that the Philly franchise has. And I don't know why, but it's just a huge double standard. It's very hypocritical, and I hate it. But go on, what were you going to say?
Let me explain to you why I think that is.
Go ahead.
So that distinction you made about how some teams are pretending versus Philadelphia that was blatantly doing it, I think is more important than you're giving it credit for, because you the objective, you know, is to go out and field the best roster you can to win games, right? That is the if you look in the rule book of whatever, that's going to be the objective, right? Hey, yes. What is your target? Okay.
Everybody wants to win a championship. Yes.
Right. Exactly. So you on any given, you know, to Sunday morning, you have a Sunday morning game. Your goal is to maximize your chances to win the game. night in, night out. That's what a coach is supposed to do. That's what you as a franchise, generally speaking, are trying to build towards. So that's one thing. That Sam Hinkie clearly, and look, in a lot of ways, like you're saying, he was right about it, was, why are we going to pretend? What's the point of pretending? I'm just going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep getting lottery balls. I'm going to keep drafting players who, you know, look, Joel Embiid was hurt.
Yeah.
He's drafting Dario Saric, who's international. There was no sign of what he was building towards. That's one thing. Secondly.
Well, no, I think that's a huge misconception. But go ahead.
Okay. You're also rubbing it into the league's face. You're rubbing it into the league's face like, hey, this is your crappy system, and we are showing you how crappy it is, and we will exploit this. Rightfully so. That's their right, right? There's no guide as to you can't do that, right?
Okay, but let me hit you with this. What about the Kings? They've been a travesty of a franchise. They've been run so poorly, and the league doesn't
but
step in
not,
there? That's just...
But
go ahead.
Joe,
they're
Joe,
not rubbing
they're
it in
not,
the face.
They're not rubbing it in the face of the NBA, right?
Right.
And next, the Sixers didn't until, like, I think even maybe Colangelo or slightly before Colangelo, didn't even attempt to, like, sign veterans, like, mentors at all. Like, so the Deng and Mozgov contracts were dumb, right? But
agreed.
The Lakers were a young team, and they probably should have just signed 2-year deals to both of those guys at a very high value and had some, you know, grown-ups in the locker room to mentor the team. It has also been proven that just having all young players, all unproven talent, is not the best way to develop habits, and that Elton Brand, I believe, was on the team. He was a really good presence, but he wasn't on there until later. Part of that is you're doing agents a solid, right?
Right.
And I bring this up because think of all of the people you as a general manager have to deal with. You have to deal with other general managers. You have to deal with the league office. You have to deal with the media. And you have to deal with agents, right? And your current players. What Sam Hinkie's process was systematically, mathematically, team building wise, it was strong. It was right for the Philadelphia 76ers. It was almost universally bad for all of the other people involved in terms of people he had to deal with. That is not a sustainable model. And I think if Sam Hinkie came back, and let's say he came back to the exact same situation, because I don't believe that Sam Hinkie, this is the only way he thinks this is a team should be built.
Exactly.
He looked at a Philadelphia situation that was in a uniquely bad situation asset-wise, and he turned that around. And he gets full credit for that. There's no... I admire that he identified what needed to be done, and he did it, and he made sure to not screw it up in any way, and he went, you know, full 100% into whatever he felt
was
right.
By the way, we should just be clear. You were on board with the process, if I'm correct, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
You see, I'm trying to draw the distinction between why I like the process, but why I didn't like the way certain perceptions of it were handled,
certainly,
right?
And certainly that's probably ultimately what cost him the position there, because he was
really,
he was flying in the face of the league, and they felt like they needed to step in and put somebody in his place. It leaves a really bad taste in my mouth. I like it. It makes me very angry. But go ahead.
He was not setting the narrative. This is something Jim Buss, partially why Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak lost their jobs in LA. There was very little media outreach. Like, hey guys, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. I understand it looks bad. I understand this, right? Other general managers are looking at him like, okay, well, he's making us, you know, look like idiots or whatever. And specifically speaking, agents, listen, when the team is going to be ready and they're going to be good and they're going to have a lot of rookie contracts and cap space, who are you going to be sitting down with to sign free agents? It's the agents who you could have done a solid by signing a veteran who's not probably going to play, but you could just sign him to like a 1-year, $10 million contract just to be a mentor and do the agent a solid and do the client a solid. And then that agent, you know, this is common sense 101, how you deal with the NBA people. Like, I'm not a front office person,
right?
But I know, I understand that when you start doing agent solids, that you get meetings that you normally wouldn't have gotten, right?
But now we're just talking specifically about what Sam Hinkie did. Like, I'm thinking more overall and, like, in terms of like how this was handled by the media and how everyone yeah, covered it. You know what I mean? Like, it just, go ahead.
No, I'll disagree with you here, Joe. You are rightfully more sensitive to this as a Sixers fan, but
I'm an NBA fan. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, but teams have been getting crap. If you hear about the coverage and how people mock, like, the Suns, the Lakers are the most blatant right now because they're the two that are actually jostling for that, you know, that Lakers for the top three pick. But the Suns want to get the number two pick at worst because nobody's crossing Brooklyn for the worst record. It's the second and third worst records right now that the jostling is happening for. And I think I've heard a lot of criticism about the Lakers, especially because I think Jeannie Buss said we never tank and, like, you know, the Lakers exceptionalism and all that nonsense.
I just wanted to be consistent, honestly, because listen, right now the Lakers are tanking. They're blatantly tanking. Everyone knows it. They're throwing in the towel and they want to get the best pick they can. I think they should. They obviously should. Everyone knows this is the best strategy going forward. And most people are saying this is their best strategy going forward. What bothers me is that, like, when you do it here, you say this is okay, this is the best way for them to move forward. But in the other position with the Sixers, oh no, they're ruining the league. It's bad for the league. I hate the two-facedness. It drives me nuts.
Joe, that's You're, not that's
we're gonna get into a no, screaming match, aren't we?
I disagree. No, I just say I disagree. The way the Lakers and Suns have been mocked day to day by national writers, everybody, like, oh yeah, they're not even trying. It's embarrassing. And there's like people who go even too far in the other direction where they're like mocking the Lakers for not even being good at tanking because, you know, they beat the Spurs and all that.
I was going to say, by the way, we should talk about that too, because, like, you know, they've won three in a row. And so I guess maybe Luke Walton really doesn't believe in tanking. It's not helping their lottery position. But again, we just discussed, it doesn't really matter when you're talking about one spot. You could jump up or down.
I'm frustrated with a lot of Lakers fans on this too, because we're talking about 9%. I understand that you always want to have your maximum chance, right?
Right.
If somebody says, hey, you have a 50% chance of winning or a 51% chance of winning, you're going to take 51% chance every time, right?
Right.
What the Lakers are sitting a lot of players. They're running out rotations that should not win, and they're winning. And credit to the players. They're working their ass off. It's true. Obviously, players don't tank, right?
Right.
Organizations may try to put themselves in a position to lose games, but coaches and players don't tank. And players specifically, I mean, coaches, you can see the rotations they throw out sometimes, and you can see, okay, they're just experimenting with stuff, but they're not trying to win games here. Credit to the players. And we are talking about second or third worst record here. It's not like they're sliding down in that regard. So it's not, look, lottery night is going to be stressful anyways. The first worst record, the Brooklyn Nets, they only have a 66% chance to get the top three pick. That's still not great. That's two out of three, like one out of three times you're completely screwed. So,
and by the way, I'm hoping they drop way down. I'm just saying, I hope they drop down in the fourth. It would be great.
Yeah, no. The pick protection stuff. It is so stressful, and it is so there's so much fighting against it. It is unnecessary. And when they made that deal, this is still all payments for the Steve Nash deal and the Dwight Howard. Well, this pick specifically is due to the Steve Nash deal. Right. So yeah,
which went to Phoenix and then went to Philly, I think, is how it worked.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So the thing about the process and the way it was covered versus how this is covered, I actually do think teams are getting crap now. I think the reason the process got more crap was because who was taking Sam Hinkie's side other than Sam Hinkie? And that's a problem, right? You need to
develop. Everyone in Philadelphia, every Sixers fan, we're totally on board.
Right.
And there was a misunderstanding around the league too, that, like, oh, Sixers fans deserve better than this. Sixers fans don't want this to be happening. They want to be winning. Like, no, everybody in Philly knew what was going on. They knew the score. They knew the name of the game. And believe me, I defy you to find one person that would take Brian Colangelo over Sam Hinkie right now. But go on.
No. No. You, again, that was not the discussion. The discussion was not, oh, we should bring in this specific person.
No. I know.
It
But I'm just saying, like, don't misunderstand. Like, everyone knew it was happening. It was because of the face of the league. And that's sort of ultimately what this discussion is about, right? How this affects, how these teams just throwing it in at the end of the season, how it affects the perception of the league-wide, like how people perceive it around the world even.
It's extreme right now. I think it's extreme right now for the reasons of, and let's not kid ourselves. It's only two or three teams that are actually doing this, right? This isn't like a league-wide thing, but it's high profile. It's the Lakers.
The Suns, the Knicks. It's because the Knicks are in there too. It's really high profile because even though they've been terrible for the last how many years, that they're actually throwing in the towel it really has some people upset, you know?
Right. But I'll come back to this. I'll say that you can never eliminate this entirely, but I think that because of A, there's two studs in this draft in Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball, like guaranteed, and there's the Lakers pick protection stuff. The noise around this is louder. And it's the end of the season, and we really don't have a lot other to talk about, right?
Oh, my God, it's so true.
And at the same time, the Lakers at least started off the season trying. They started off 10-10. And honestly, they're not – yes, they are running out some – again, I'll repeat myself. They're running out some rotations that are not, let's say, the most highest likelihood of winning kind of rotations, but – there at least there's a semblance of competition. There's a semblance of, okay, you know, and they're winning, right? And the Suns, I, you know, they shut down Tyson Chandler. Sometimes they sit Devin Booker, stuff like that. But at the same time, I think that this is a kind of a weird, this is like, the, remember we had the intentional foul discussion last year? It was like, we just a fever pitch. And where's that discussion now, right?
Right.
We don't talk about it anymore. I think that this tanking discussion, as more and more general managers get smart about pick protections and what picks they're actually handing out, and I think when more and more people realize, like, hey, just because you have the one or two pick doesn't mean you're guaranteed to get the best player in the draft.
Right.
And just because the ping pong balls are in your favor doesn't mean you're going to actually win on lottery night. It was actually weird last year where I think nobody moved in the lottery,
it went completely on the board. Everybody picked in the exact spot they were. And I have conspiracy theories about that, but yeah, everybody picked in the spot they were supposed to. It was, I think that's happened once in the entire, you know, in the entire history of the league before. But listen,
that'll be a wake up call too for teams, right? It's like, okay, well, we tanked, you know, to end up at the, you know, fourth spot.
And that's what the lottery is designed to do. In that respect, it is working, right? Like, that's why we have a lottery, to discourage people from throwing in the towel, from tanking blatantly, because you're not guaranteed that spot. And the problem is, though, is like the league incentivizes it. And I've thought about this a lot. I don't know how you get around this issue. Until the league changes the rules, until they stop incentivizing losing at the end of the season, it's never going away. It may not be as hot button of a topic as it is right now, because there are legitimately four or five teams doing this blatantly. But it's always going to be there. We're always going to see a team just packing in their players at the end of the season to try and maximize their ping pong balls. Until they change that, it's not going away. Again, as you mentioned, it's not going to be as hot button of a topic as it is this year, because, you know,
look at the teams involved, right? The Suns aren't going to be doing this next year. The Lakers aren't going to be doing this next year. The Sixers, I don't think, are going to be doing this next year.
Sixers definitely not. They'll have a real team next year. If Joel Embiid stays healthy, oh my God, they should be pushing for the playoffs. But listen, go ahead.
Right. And even, you know, even if Joel Embiid is again playing around 50 games and on a minutes restriction, Ben Simmons should be really good next year. So, and Darius Saric is going to be better, and your whole team is going to be, you know, just 1 year better. The Knicks aren't going to be doing this. So you look at this, you look at down the road, right? How many teams are actually going to be in a position where they're actually doing it like this? And so I do think that this is going to die down.
Yeah, you know, and even I'll say this as well. Last year, if you looked at the bottom standings, how many games did the Lakers win last year? 19, 17, something like that?
Yeah, I think 17.
The Sixers won 10. right? So the quality of play from this year to last year has even come up. The worst team right now has 20 wins.
And by the way, all of those teams that at the bottom have had their moments. The Lakers had some really exciting wins early in the season. The Suns, you know, they have the Devin Booker kind of crazy game. The Philadelphia 76ers had, you know, Embiid.
They had January when it looked like they could possibly like had an outside chance of playing for the playoffs. It was insane. It was insane. But listen, let me ask you about the Lakers specifically, even though we've been talking about them the whole time. Let me ask you about this pick. All right, so I want to get your feelings on it. How do you feel? How anxious are you as a Lakers fan right now that they might lose that pick?
Yeah, you know, when the season started, I thought that, look, it's going to be really tough. I didn't think that they were going to be this bad record-wise, so I thought they were going to be, you know, it was going to be unlikely anyways that they keep it. Now that they're in a position, I think that they will end up in the third spot. So I think they'll have a 47% chance. Look, I mean, let's just be real. 47% chance means more times than not, you will lose the pick.
Right.
And while I say that, I also understand how important it is to get the pick. And whether that's the 1, 2, or 3 pick, either way, it opens up a lot of options. And at a time when, because of, you know, I keep bringing it up, but I do think that they are poisonous enough to merit discussion because of the Deng and Mozgov contracts. And I think that the salary cap projection was about $1 million less than they had even already projected it to be.
Yeah. And dropping, I think.
Right, right. One of the only ways that they can add talent is going to be through this draft. So while they still have the Houston Rockets pick, I think that'll be 27th or 28th, and they have their own second rounder. It is very vital that they keep the pick. And if they get the first or second pick, then they get Fultz or Ball. If they get the third pick, they have plenty of options. And I also think that if they have the third pick, they might even consider trading it. But the point is that it's a very, very big asset at a time that the Lakers could really use it. But at the same time, regardless of that, the Lakers should be, you know, active in free agency and trying to get players that, like Deng and Mozgov, that are veterans that can help the team, help the locker room, but probably be, you know, a better players on the court.
Like Derrick Rose. And pretty sure Derrick Rose is going to the Lakers.
How dare you?
There we go.
The Kings feel like a pretty Derrick Rose destination.
Yeah, but actually, I could see that too. Well, let me ask you this then. What happens if they don't get the pick? I mean, what are they going to do? Is this team, do you see this team being able to grow in any significant way?
Oh, yeah.
With the talent they have on it right now. I mean, listen. I think Brandon Ingram is going to be really good. Seeing him with another year under his belt, I think it's going to be a big step for him. And Julius Randle is a decent player. But outside of that, I mean, I hate D'Angelo Russell. I don't even want to watch his stupid face. I can't stand him. But
yeah, you know, let's go one by one. So Brandon Ingram, his second half and specifically his last, like, I think 20 games, he's already shown a leap that I didn't quite see coming until next season. So I'm very excited about him.
Mm-hmm.
Julius Randle, I was a little bit down on him last year. I think I've kind of turned around a little bit. I think he can, you know, he can be really good. I if he comes into training camp with, you know, even a 30 to 33% kind of consistent 3-point shot, I think that elevates his game.
What's he at right now? Is it like,
He's actually doing okay right now, but his volume is low. So I mean, like a consistent, like high volume kind of guy who can shoot consistently, like 33, 35, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
And then, so regarding D'Angelo Russell, look, his perception around the league for whatever reason is not great. I can tell you this from watching him, from looking at his stats, especially his per 36. He, as a second year guard, is doing really well. And I understand why the perception around him is bad. You know, there are stories around, like, you heard national writers hint at, you know, he likes to go out and party and stuff like that.
Right.
But what I will say is that as a basketball player, he is doing everything he needs to do. He just from hearing behind the scenes stories, there's nothing wrong with his work ethic. there's a casual nature to where he looks like he looks really cool on the court, like that that rubs people the wrong way. There's lingering bad feelings from, you know, the weird Snapchat thing and whatnot. But I will say it largely is undeserved in terms of how vitriolic some of the you know, the coverage around him is. He was benched for like 2-3 games. He still played, but he came off the bench and he didn't complain, not at all. And if he's really the petulant child that people say he is, he would have said something. And he had, you know, his body language is always good. Until the Lakers start winning, I guess nothing will change his reputation. And that's unfortunate. But I will say that they got more creative with him in the second half of the season. They had him off ball more. So he's you know, I think Darius Seriano, he's this really smart Lakers writer. He mentioned that, you know, D'Angelo Russell is like a lead guard. That means like he can shoot, he can be off ball, on ball, whatever, but he's a really important piece to this team and to this offense. Early on in the season, it was really frustrating to watch the Lakers play because he would be setting people up, and the Lakers are not a great three-point shooting team. The ironic thing is D'Angelo Russell is a really good, even off-ball shooter. And this in the second half of the season, they started getting him more involved in off-ball situations, and it really, really helped the team. So I think and part of the reason they did that is, so we all know the first and second prospects in this league are point guards. And so if the Lakers are fortunate enough to get a position, you know, get one or two, then if they draft a point guard, well, what do you do? Well, they've kind of set up a situation where you could run, you know, Lonzo Ball and D'Angelo Russell out there together, and they work just fine because Lonzo Ball also plays really well off ball.
Right.
So these are the kinds of things that they're doing, and D'Angelo Russell has responded to all of this pretty well. Now, there are some things that frustrate me about him, his turnovers and all that, but I want you to go, and anybody else who's down D'Angelo Russell, I want you to go through any of your favorite point guards, and I want you to look at them 2 years in. And I want you to really, really look at, and not only 2 years in, look at his age.
Yeah.
At his age, I want you to find another point guard that is significantly better. You won't find it. And I think...
Listen, what you're saying is all very fair and probably true, but if I'm a fan, excuse me, I hate watching him play. I just hate watching him play. I don't like the way... I don't like the way his face looks. I think is what it is. He annoys the hell out of me. He bothers me. And the thing is, like, the whole ice in the veins thing earlier in the year. Oh my God. Like, stop. Just stop being such an arrogant jerk. Just stop. Like, it's annoying. Like, you should be playing well. I'm not a fan.
To have confidence. You want your players to have confidence.
Sure.
Right?
You don't.
And I don't want any of the players to be timid. I don't want them to, you know, not show that swagger. That's important stuff. And if he's going to be a leader on the team, he needs to show that. He needs to show that emotion. I think what rubs people off the wrong way, I think you come in with a little bit of, oh, I don't like this kid right out of the gate, right? And then
me personally?
On top of that, no. I'm saying everybody.
I certainly do that.
Right. So no. And also on top of that, he can be a little careless with the ball. I think that's a function of age. He looks, again, it's like we want people to look like, you know, so intense and so this, and he has intent. Like Brandon Ingram looks like you can't even tell if he knows what's going on.
You know what it
but
is?
He has an intensity, but it's just the way he looks. It's like a casual look.
Yeah. What it is like when you watch Brandon Ingram, he's quietly intense. He's a good player. He's going to work really hard. You know, he has a lot of upside, and you know, he's for the most part, fairly humble. I've never seen him doing any stupid show off kind of things. When you look at D'Angelo Russell, man, he's just annoying to look at. I had a point. I just can't get past this. I'm just like, he just comes off as arrogant. No matter what he does, he comes off as arrogant. It just bothers me personally. I don't know why. I have nothing. I want to root for him. Like I want to root for every player. I want to root for young guys. He's really young. I want to forgive the fact that he's like, what is he, 21 now?
Yeah.
He's 21.
He might, and he's, not, he he might not even be 21, but yeah,
he's really young. He's like second year in the league. He's really young. He has a lot of potential, but my God, I can't stand watching him play. He makes me crazy. He's everything. His just demeanor on the court embodies everything that I hate about some players. It's the players I hate the most are the ones that just show off all the time. I'm like, just play the game. That's what you're there for. You're getting well compensated to do this. And yes, it's a lot of work and you should have a ton of confidence, but you don't need to, like, it's false confidence is what it is. That's what bothers me. It's like, he's trying to show that he's a grown up. It's like, he's constantly trying to show that he belongs and he's a grown up and he's cool. And that gets under my skin so badly. Like, if you're a dork, who cares? Look at the Lopez brothers. They're huge dorks. They embrace it. They love it. Everybody loves them for it. Not D'Angelo Russell. Like, just stop trying to be cool. Just stop it. Just stop it. Anyway.
Right. So here's what I'll say to that.
Go ahead.
Everybody is who they are, right? You want them to be themselves.
Yeah,
right?
But is he being himself is my question. Is he being himself or is he being who he thinks people want him to be? And that's what drives me nuts.
No. If you look at him in college and if you look at part of the reasons why, you know, people on their draft board when they drafted him said that he had like the highest star potential past Karl-Anthony Towns, superstar potential. And part of it was because of that demeanor. You can't be really good in this league without having that sort of edge. And people sometimes have it quietly and sometimes people have it loudly. He has it loudly. And I think it rubs people the wrong way again because there's this inherent dislike of him has developed. And it's partly because, you know, Byron Scott, his last coach, would publicly say that, you know, he's not that great. And look, I think I'm coming off as a little bit of an apologist. He's obviously there's some things that have rubbed him the wrong, like he's rubbed off his coaches the wrong way. He's obviously there's enough stories about him to where he needs to increase his professionalism. There's definitely a lot of stories, but I do think that the coverage around him, nationally speaking, now you'll notice local beat writers don't have anything bad to say about him because they follow him day in, day out, right?
Right.
It's this national perception that he has to work on. And he does need to increase his professionalism. He does need to cut down on his turnovers. He does need to focus more. And it's on him, right? It's on him to come in this summer and come next year better. But young point guards who are his age, there really isn't any example I can point to and say, okay, D'Angelo Russell has really, really done poorly because look at this guy.
Right.
I can't find a single guy to look at and say, okay, well, D'Angelo Russell is not keeping up with this guy. So
I'm trying to think really quick off the top of my head who's really young as a point guard and doing really well, but nothing's coming to me. So go ahead. You got
Remember when Chris Dunn was supposed to be the future Minnesota starter?
But he's even older than
Ricky Rubio.
He's older than him.
And he's even older than D'Angelo Russell. Yeah. And they thought he could supplant Ricky Rubio this year.
Yeah. So, well, listen, know, we've talked about it. We've talked a whole lot about D'Angelo Russell. Nobody wants to hear about D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
Let's move on. But what do you think they do? What do you think they do if they lose the pick? How bad of a I guess my original point was going to be, how bad is this for that team? Like, what are their options? What are they going to do if they lose that pick?
Well, I think they have enough young talent on the team to consolidate possibly
trade. To put a couple of players. Okay.
And maybe make a trade for a more established veteran. But I do think that if they lose the pick, there won't be a significant move. I really don't think so. I think it would kind of be silly for them to do that, to go, you know, all in on anything. I do think that the team the individual players will show growth. And if they improve by 5, 6, 7 wins or 8 wins next year, and then you take that, you go into the summer, you'll have your pick at that point.
Nope.
So, you know,
if they lose the pick this year, yeah. But
right.
Yeah, you're right.
So I think if they keep their pick, obviously they're going to have a lot of options. If it's at the top two, they're going to keep the player. If it's the third pick, I'm of the opinion that they will trade if they get the third pick.
Well, that's interesting. For who? Who do you, for a player or for a bunch of picks?
For a player. No, I think they are going to look for a solid veteran. But I don't. If they lose the pick, obviously it'll be bad for the team. But I don't think that it'll make them have, you know, drastic, like they I don't think they'll do anything specifically drastic. Now, I that's not to say that they couldn't trade some of their young players. Of course they could, you know, Larry Ness Jr., Julius Randle, somebody, you know, one of those two could possibly be moved out. Jordan Clarkson could possibly be moved. They'll have plenty of options. It'll just depend on who's available in the trade market and what people feel their values are.
True. And I think they could get a decent return for Jordan Clarkson. I think that kid's I think he's good. I think he's, you know, what was he? Was he a second round pick? Or just a late first? He was a second round pick.
Second round pick.
He's very outperformed his pick status, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
And I think any team who needs a good point guard, there you go. They could get something for him. They could get some sort of, I don't know if they would get a player in return that would actually help them, but they could get another pick, I guess.
Right. And I think in that case, I think at this stage, truthfully speaking, I think that the Lakers are going to prioritize getting players.
Yeah. I mean, they're still a few years away, even if they land the number one pick, they're still a few years away.
For sure.
Let's talk about a few of the other teams real quick. Just to wrap this up, because like we've talked about the Lakers so long.
Of course.
In both of our situations, right, we're both looking forward to the season being over for different reasons. Like your team, like they started, I remember when we talked earlier in the season, they started out on fire and everyone was like, baby Lakers. I was even excited to watch the Lakers.
They were so fun.
They were so fun. It seems like an entire lifetime ago.
And by the way, to go back to this.
Yes.
D'Angelo Russell got hurt after that streak. And
that's true.
It completely threw off the team's rhythm. D'Angelo Russell, if you look at what the team's offense is when he's on the court versus he's not off the court, versus when he's off the court, you will be very surprised at how bad the offense drops.
Yeah, no, it's true. He does have an impact on that team. It's not a matter of him being a good player and having potential. And I still think he can be a really good player. It's just him. I just hate him. Nothing. I mean, I don't hate him personally. Don't get me wrong. I've never met the guy, you know, but as a basketball player, oh God. Anyway, listen, moving on. I feel bad for the Nets. As much as the Lakers really need to keep their pick this year, like the polar opposite is the Nets. They have no incentive to lose because that pick goes to Boston. And in spite of that, they have a horrible roster. And I really like what they're doing. They're in a position where they're forced to build, if you want to call it the right way, the quote unquote right way. They have to look for young talent, put them on short contracts, and, you know, scour the league, pick up guys who are injured. And do what they can. And I really like that method of building. And at some point, you consolidated enough good players that maybe you can trade for a great player. And at some point, you know, they'll have their draft picks back. I feel terrible for the Brooklyn Nets, except that they did this to themselves. Everyone right. except for them saw this coming. Like, everyone saw this coming. So I kind of feel like it's, you know, sour grapes. Like, this is what you deserve. But I can't stop feeling bad for them because they're really trying. Like when they picked up I'm gonna do this again with blanking on names. A couple of
Jeremy Lin.
What's that?
Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, Jeremy Lin. I thought there's another problem. He was out most of the season, and he's been good for them when he's been in.
Right. It's right to feel bad just because none of the coaches and general manager that are there right now were involved in that, right?
Right.
It was all Billy King and the previous regime. So, it's unfortunate. It's obviously they're develop what I think they're doing right now. Culture. They've really.
Sorry, they have I was losing you.
Okay, no. Yeah, no, I think what I really like about what the Nets are doing is that they're building a good culture. I think their general manager, Sean Marks, is really smart. He swung for the fences. You know, he's signed those two restricted, you know, big offers. And while the teams matched, I think it was Tyler Johnson and Alan Crabb, right? So
yeah,
the teams, their respective teams matched. But I think that those are the kinds of moves that I find really, really smart. I think Kenny Atkinson is, you know, he seems like a really smart, very well-respected coach. So, you know, they're building the framework of the culture they want to develop. The Brooklyn's a really nice market. So in terms of free agency, they could, you know, accelerate their rebuild based off of who they get in free agency. And yeah, it's a really unfortunate, obviously.
Wouldn't it blow your mind though if like in 2 years they're better than the Knicks? That would be hilarious to me. Like this team, that's in such a bad position in 2 years could probably like put enough pieces together and be smart enough with management, with getting players, young players on good contracts and finding young talent that everybody else passes on. In a couple of years, if they do it right, they could end up being better than the Knicks, and that would crack me up.
Especially since they're
both in New York, and like it's a destination. People want to be in New York. Brooklyn's super cool, man. Like they could get a really legitimate, you know, piece in the future. I don't know. They have, the thing is, if you're in New York, you always have hope, unless you're the Knicks.
Right.
And, you know, speaking of the Knicks, man, like, oh, they're another one. They're not even trying to hide the fact. You know what makes me crazy about the Knicks is that Phil Jackson is destroying Porzingis' career. This kid should be on the tip of everyone's tongue, as good as he is the last 2 years. And they're sitting him. And they're ruining his career for the, you know, he has nobody around him. They're a train wreck. They keep trying to run the triangle. It's like, what are you doing, Phil Jackson? What are you doing? It's an atrocity. I want to watch that team and I want to watch them get good. And I feel terrible for Porzingis. And, you know, and I understand the need to tank to get a really good pick if they can. But I mean, what's it going to get you, really? Like, you still have Carmelo. Until you get rid of him, where are you going with this?
I think that situation will be resolved this summer. Just reading between the lines with some quotes, I think that Carmelo will be open to a possible trade this summer. It didn't make sense for him to accept any trade midseason. He has a luxury of the no trade, so he can basically dictate where he wants to go. So if you're going to make a change like that in your personal life and just moving and all that, why not just wait for the summer? Probably during the summer, you can figure out what the landscape of the entire league is, how free agency shakes out, and then you can kind of pick and choose and say, hey, you know, for example, I want to go to the Clippers, or I want to go, you know, somewhere like that. And, you know, that. So I think that once Carmelo goes, that'll start the process of kind of, you know, and Derrick Rose won't be there. You kind of start the process of building around Porzingis properly.
Yeah.
Now Porzingis, I love Porzingis. He didn't look great this year. Whether that's a function of the system, although I think the triangle should be pretty good for him in general.
Yeah, but it's an antiquated system. Nobody runs it. Nobody can understand.
Right.
Yeah, it's bad for every player. If the whole league is pick and roll now, why are you running a triangle? Like, right. Go ahead.
No, I agree. And so, you know, and we also anticipate like, you know, steady growth with young players. It's not always the case. Sometimes they have a really good rookie season, fall a little bit, but then pick it up in third year. And so with Porzingis, I understand he was like, you know, he was so much fun. He was like last year what Joel Embiid was this year, right? It's just everybody wanted to watch him just ball out.
Well, he wasn't quite as good as Embiid, but yes.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Embiid was special. But yeah, I think that Porzingis' development will still continue. I think plenty of players have emerged from really, really bad situations and done okay. Yeah, but the franchise overall, you know, it's this summer is going to be a really interesting summer. If Carmelo Anthony is still on the team, I really don't know how the Knicks get better.
Yeah, and I feel bad for Knicks fans, man. Like since Dolan got here, it's just been this organization has been terribly run. They don't know what they're doing. He doesn't.
They had one good year.
Yeah. It's really sad. Anyway, listen, you know what? Speaking of Embiid, let me get your take on this real quick. This is not on our plan of things to talk about, but
yeah.
Who would you give Rookie of the Year?
This might upset you.
Go ahead.
It's going to be, I would go Brogdon.
I knew it. Oh.
Brogdon, Embiid, and Saric.
How dare you?
Look, man, it wasn't only the amount of games he played. It was the limited minutes that he played, right? So if you look at cumulative minutes that he was on the court, you know, rookie of the year, right? Most outstanding rookie, Joel Embiid, no question. There wasn't even anybody close.
Right. Stop right there.
Right. But when we're talking rookie of the year, it's like,
but here's, you know, when you say limited minutes, he played in limited minutes. That's more of a reason to vote for him. He played an average of, I think it was 24 minutes per game, and he put up those numbers.
No, he was on
a minutes restriction, played 31 games, and he was averaging 20-7.
Right, right. No. With two blocks.
It's insane, man.
I'm a huge Embiid fan.
All right, I know. Everyone is. And I think the stupid thing is, like, everyone's like, well, we can't give it to Embiid because he didn't play enough games. Like, well, okay, so what's the cutoff? And if you're talking about rookie of the year, shouldn't it be the best rookie in the year? He's by far, hands down, far and away, the best rookie. I don't know. I have a problem giving it to anyone else.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
If Joel Embiid did what he did for 10 games, just 10 games in the season, would you say that's fair to give it to him still?
I get your argument. Like, what's the amount of games that you need to play? Right. I understand. 10 games, yes, probably a little bit too low. And where do we draw the line? I totally understand. But he did play 31.
and 31 is not impressive. And the fact that he's doing it in limited minutes, part of the rookie year and what makes it difficult is players have to push through because they've never played a season that long. They've never played that many games. And for somebody like Malcolm Brogdon in a second rounder to have kept up, you know, his and in fact improved by the end of the season, I think that that also is worthy of consideration, right? It's a rookie player getting used to the NBA lifestyle, the NBA grind, playing more games than they ever did in, you know, college.
So then why not Dario Saric? Because he's been a revelation putting up way better numbers, and I think he's having a bigger impact on a crappier team, but
I think Brogdon actually is a very, very key part to the Bucks. He stabilized that team. Matthew Dellavedova has not been good for them, so his point guard play has actually been really, really important to the Bucks. And the Bucks are in the playoffs. It's kind of a big deal to me because he's had big moments in big games that had playoff implications. And Saric, I'm a fan of Saric, but his efficiency is pretty low right now, and that's understandable. I think, you know, efficiency is not if I'm looking at it from a team building perspective, I don't care that Saric's efficiency is not great because I think that'll improve. I want him to get those reps and I want him to get those shots up. So that's why I have Embiid second, because I think Embiid, you know, when we look back at his rookie season, he should get that, at least that much recognition to be in that spot.
Yeah, I don't know. I disagree. I think it should be Embiid, Saric, and then shut the hell up.
No, and look, big picture, this is exciting for Philly. I remain, you know, it's such a weird situation with Embiid because I really want him to do well. I don't want to jinx anything with him. But he, you know, it's a big step from going to 31 games to hopefully he's at 50, 55 games, and then he can start playing, you know, 70 games. I don't think he should ever go above that.
It would be great. I think myself and everyone else around Philadelphia are like holding their breath because he hasn't shown the ability to stay healthy. By the way, he puts his body out there. Like, I mean, how many times has he dove into the stands? Like, I love the way he plays, but man, you're going to kill yourself. You're going to break everything in your body. What are you doing?
Right. Long term, he probably has to actually probably tone it down 10%, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Save that. Yeah, save that kind of intensity for playoffs or something like that. Because part of being a professional player and all these games and all these seasons, the grind is managing your body, managing your intensity to save yourself for the long haul.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, speaking of playoffs, we were going to talk about playoffs, but I'm glad we didn't because there's no real matchup set. I mean, there's one matchup set, but we don't need to go into it. Everyone is going to cover it. Of course, everyone's going to cover the race to the bottom, too. But I don't know. I think it's been a worthwhile endeavor. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Well, with that, Damon, we should probably depart.
Yes. Elf, you can. And if you're listening, follow me on Twitter at DamanR, DamanR.
And you still write for 16 Wins a Ring?
My writing has really, I've been so busy. My writing, so I have written for 16 Wins a Ring and Silver Screen and Roll for Laker Stuff. So those are two websites you guys should always check out. But my writing has dwindled, unfortunately. So just follow me on Twitter. I'm always on Twitter.
Yeah, you're one of the best Twitter followers.
I appreciate that.
You always crack me up. Every time you put out a tweet, I'm like, man, why didn't I think of that? Why am I not witty?
I appreciate that.
I guess the best place I could listen to you is here, huh?
Yes. Yes. Subscribe, rate, review.
There you go. Thanks, Devin. You're welcome on anytime, obviously. But thanks for coming on to talk about the Lakers and Sixers. And we should do this again probably around lottery time, huh?
Oh, my God. I'm so stressed out. I'm honestly, like, I'm trying to be calm about it, but it's like this doomsday clock that's just ticking yeah. towards that. It's going to be very stressful. I mean, it's a big day. It's a big day for Philadelphia too, right? You could end up with 1-4 possibly.
Yeah,
that's
possibly.
The best draw.
I'll tell you this. Ooh. I don't really care either way. I mean, I do. I would love to get the Lakers pick if nothing else than just to say, uh-huh. But not to you personally, just, you know, in general.
No. Look, the Lakers have been good for so long that, although it bothers me sometimes how much glee people take with the Lakers being in this situation, but I get it. If I was in the opposite situation, I would also do the same.
Yeah, exactly. And it would be great if the Sixers get it this year. If not, they'll get it next year unprotected. And nobody knows how good the Lakers are going to be next year. So
yeah, that's very true.
It'll be fun. It's going to be, for me, like it's going to be a little disappointing if they don't get your pick. And then they like stay at like, or if they drop to 5 or something. Also, the other thing that makes this really great is the Kings pick swap. If the Kings jump above Philly, Philly gets it.
That pick swap, by the way, is like Sam Hinkie's parting gift. It's amazing.
I know.
He keeps giving, man. He keeps giving. It's pretty great.
He did die for our sins. I forget who came up with it, but it's so good. Anyway, my friend, let's do this again soon. Thanks for coming on.
Sure.
I'll talk to you later. All right.
Thanks, Joe.
You got it, man. Bye-bye. Well, there you go, everybody. Damon Rangula. We went a little bit long. I got to really work on this. But thanks again, Damon, for coming on. Everybody follow him on Twitter at DamonR. He's a great follow. And he's a great, very knowledgeable guest. So I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.